Do all of you have a Bible?
Just won't have anybody to pick on.
Go to 1 Corinthians chapter 10.
The doors.
Let's go back a little bit. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 24. In the past, Doug and Rick were having this great spiritual discussion about the purpose of sporting events.
I remember this.
What conclusion did they come to, though?
I don't know.
Sorry, I was really sick.
But I'm sure, you know, they talked, well, the purpose of sporting events is to show us character and...
Show us the damn Cowboys.
You know, all that kind of stuff. This, the Christ, you know, the fellowship of Christian athletes kind of stuff. And so Doug, and they came to me and asked me what I thought the purpose of sporting events was. And I said, it's to show that there's only one winner. And in order for us to communicate, you have to know that you're in a contest. And you have to know that the contest doesn't have a great deal to do with what it looks like it's happening. Something else is going on besides what it appears. And that the analogy that Paul used is that we're running a race. It's as in a sporting event. And interestingly enough, in the Olympics, in the Greek culture, they ran naked. And the idea of running in a race naked is spiritually what we must be. We are openly commending ourselves to every man's conscience in the sight of God, not hiding that which no longer being under the control of the things that we used to be under the control of. So starting in verse 24, know you not that they which run in a race run all, but only one receiveth the prize? So run that you may obtain. And every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. I therefore so run, not as uncertainly, so fight I, not as one that beateth the air, but I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest by any means when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. Now the word there that it says is temperate in all things. Temperate is a great word, and it's not possible to translate it into the English language. It doesn't mean, you know, like the temperance movements of stopping everybody from drinking or something, but temperance means that there is nothing in your system, nothing in your being, over which you don't have control. There's nothing that controls you, whether it be anger, whether it be sex, whether it be cigarettes, whether it be anything. As we move on this path, we are coming to a point where you must not be under the control of anything. That's what temperate means. Do you understand that? Okay. Moreover, brethren, I would not have... Now he's saying that's the case. Now here's what you look at. He's going to show us that everything that took place in the Old Testament happened for an example or a pattern or a figure that we might see. It says, moreover, brethren, I would not that you should be ignorant how that all our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea and were all baptized unto Moses in the cloud and in the sea and did all eat the same spiritual food and did all drink the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them or went with them, and that rock was Christ. But with many of them God was not well pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. Now, these things were examples. And another word for that is metaphor. They were parables. They were analogies. They were all those patterns. Anything you want to say, they were an architect's model. To the intent that we should not lust or desire after evil things as they also lusted. Now, again, the idea is having your senses exercised so you can discern good from evil and so that you're not under the control of anything save the Father. Neither be ye idolaters, as some of them, as were some of them, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Neither let us commit fornication, as some of them committed and fell in one day 23,000. Neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed of serpents. Neither murmur ye, as some of them also murmured and were destroyed of the destroyer. Now all of these happened, all of these things happened unto them for examples. And they are written for our admonition upon whom the ends of the world are come. Everything that took place happened for your benefit, is what that says. Therefore, wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. Now the idea of taking a stand or standeth is the idea of justifying yourself. And for those of you who were at either Groves or at the High Place activity, you know that something terrible happens to you the moment you begin to justify yourself. There is no thing that has happened to you, no part of you, that hasn't happened exactly by the hand of God, exactly as it should be. And you have to understand that. The things that you are ashamed of, or the things that you have been ashamed of in the past, which is the things that you're going to put on this list, which are the things you're going to put on the list, are the things where you believe that God has forsaken you. That's why you feel shame. You understand that? You believe that God isn't in that arena. You're alone, and it causes you shame or separation or fear. Well, I'm here to tell you there's no possible arena, no possible thing that has ever happened to you that wasn't not in the permissive will, but by the determined will of God to bring you to this point. That's the freedom of this. That's the freedom of the gospel, that you might see that. Now, it happened to you, and those things that you're ashamed of happened to you, only so that when you pour them out and we have all things in common, that the things that you think are darkness will become light to someone else, and then the idea of being poured out for all the brethren's sake through that openness, we will be knit together in love. That's what we're about. That's what we're doing this for. It's not something that you should be... I mean, obviously there's temerity over it.
Temerity.
You're a little hesitant. You're a little.
That would be putting it mildly.
Concern. Okay, but I want you to understand that I understand that hesitancy, but I also understand the joy that's in the other side of that hesitancy, and I understand that for your joy to be complete, you have to pass through this barrier. You understand? Okay, now. Wherefore, that's why it says, wherefore let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. Because if you, again, it's the one, if for those of you you can testify of it that have experienced this, that the one thing whereby you have a reason to fear is if you justify yourself. You understand?
No.
Let Harry talk to you about it.
I can't do that. Last time you said, okay, I want everybody to say one thing that they said. That was such an experience. I don't remember that experience.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not a childhood thing I blocked out. That's 2 years ago. I don't know.
You don't remember justifying yourself?
I don't know what happened. I just remember being told to leave.
What if you're there and you're speaking this stuff, and you have an urge to justify yourself, but you don't say it. It's the same thing.
Well, one of the things that happens in the context is that Believe me, I'll know.
What?
Yeah, you'll know.
Because I mean, I know how I go about justifying myself, and I think it's real sly.
Well, you can't. you don't have to worry about it.
It won't work.
Well,
it
sure
won't work.
Don't worry, Matt.
Don't worry about that one. Now, but that's not what I'm talking about. Here's the thing I want you to understand. There is no temptation. Now, the word temptation is thlipsis, which it means testing, or what you would consider badness or evil or some bad thing has happened to you. There's no temptation taking you, but such as is common to all men. You think that the experience that you've had is unique. You think that that particular thing in the back of your mind that you're ashamed of is so unique and so weird and so terrible that you're suffering alone with it. I'm here to tell you that there is no thing that could take place that isn't common to all. Okay? But God is faithful, who will not suffer you or allow you to be tempted above that which you are able, but with the temptation also make a way to escape, that you may be able to bear it. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, flee. Now, in the sense of this in the Greek is really wild. It's like, wherefore, my beloved brethren, above all things, flee from idolatry. Because idolatry, that's those dealies that you've created. All of this on this page is idolatry. Okay? I speak as to wise men, discern ye or judge ye what I say. Now this is where we're going to get interesting. Now this is hard to understand, so don't open your minds here. The cup of blessing which we bless, is it not the communion of the blood of Christ? The bread which we break, is it not the communion of the body of Christ? For we being many are one bread and one body, for we are all partakers of that one bread. You got that? That's what communion means. It's the affirmation of our oneness. Now, behold Israel after the flesh. Now, Israel after the flesh, as it says in Galatians, is any place where you've learned rules. That's Jerusalem after the flesh. That's the Jerusalem after the flesh and answers to Mount Zion. You understand that? All the little rules of behavior. That's Israel after the flesh. You got that? Behold Israel after the flesh. Are not they which eat of the sacrifices partakers of the altar? Now, to be a partaker with the altar means you are identified with it. It's no accident that in the Hebrew language, the word to eat is the same word that it means to consume by fire. This is a picture of the tabernacle in the wilderness. This is the altar right here, the brazen altar upon which the sacrifices were given to God. That's your stomach in the analogy. You cannot eat, you cannot consume anything into your system without it being consumed on an altar. Can you buy that a minute? All right. Just like I said, any thought you think is a prayer. You cannot possibly think a thought without it being the altar of incense, without it being a prayer.
Well, the same goes then for seeing, hearing, touching, right. Any sense.
Right. All of this is simply the things that cause you not to see God. You got that? Now let's go on. It gets a little weird then. What say I then? That the idol is anything, or that which is offered in sacrifices to idols is anything? For I say that the things which the Gentiles sacrifice, they sacrifice to devils and not to God. You cannot, hear this. I say that the thing which the Gentiles sacrifice, they sacrifice to devils and not to God. Do you have any idea what that means? To sacrifice means to give importance to. In the case, you remember all the stuff we've talked about eating? What you eat is what gives you sustenance. That's what it means to eat only the body of Christ. It's only from Him and seeing of Him that you get your sustenance in life. You cannot serve God and mammon. Mammon meaning anything else that you have confidence in. Most of you have grown up being taught to have confidence in 1,000 things. Your ability to survive, your ability to manipulate, your ability to get things done, your ability not to get things done. It's some, everything about it is manipulative. You understand that? You've been taught a whole series of things. Every one of those things that you've been taught that you have confidence in because they've worked for you are enemies of faith. Those are the things that you have gone through life giving importance to. And you cannot serve God in those things. It's impossible. All you can do is put God's name on top of those things. That's why the preaching is so terrible. I mean, you know, I don't envy you having to listen to me. But I also don't, I know the end result of it. That's why I'm, it's like, if you were sitting down outside and there was a rattlesnake coiled to bite you, and if I didn't tell you that that snake was about to bite you, then I wouldn't love you. I'd just let you get bit. My purpose in this, which you think is so terrible sometimes, is to tell you that there's a snake about to bite you. And there's a better way, there's a better way of living, there's a better way of seeing than that which has consumed you all your life. You have been sacrificing from God's standpoint to demons. You've been giving importance to demons, to all the things that you've given confidence in all your life. Now, it says, I say the things which the Gentiles sacrifice or give importance to, they sacrifice to devils and not to God. And I would not that you should have fellowship with devils. You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of devils. You cannot be a partaker of the Lord's table and of the table of devils. It's impossible. You can't do both. You cannot eat at this altar and this altar. You can't eat here sometimes and here sometimes. You know, you can't worship Molech sometimes and God sometimes. You can't pay tithes to the Father sometimes and then pay them to your chief God sometimes. You can't sometimes pray and sometimes not pray. It doesn't work that way. From God's standpoint, all of the things that you have been doing in the world are childish things. Do you understand? All right. Now here's the kicker. Do you provoke the Lord to jealousy? Are we stronger than He? You wouldn't, nobody would ever be dumb enough to verbalize that says, I'm stronger than God. But you say that whenever you put more confidence in your ability to accomplish something than God's ability to accomplish it. Can you understand that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now some of you...
Hold on a second. You know, I'm relating to this to my turf, and that is, you know, like practicing or something like that. And, it's, you know, I just can't conceive of just sitting back and letting God do the work. You know, it's like if he's as powerful and his efficacy is such that he can do the things that he's done before, then certainly he can, you know, endow me with the talent or do it. You know, I don't know why I don't believe that.
Or not do it.
Or not what?
Or not empower you.
Not empower you. I mean, he may have something totally different. But you can't know that if as long as you've got your own plan and your own agenda, then you'll never know the peace and joy of God. Because you'll be, if you become a believer or a Christian, you'll take your own plan or your own agenda and you'll put God's name on it. Well, that's not the way God works. You remember Agag and getting slashed up in the Amalekites? We just celebrated the Feast of Purim was God's victory over the flesh. Now, we're dealing now with an area, this idea of temperance, is so that all these things that control you, that control your responses, can be opened and confessed and dealt with. And that's what groves is about. All right? Now, there's a scripture that says, when I was a child, I spake as a child, I understood as a child, I thought or reasoned as a child. But when I became a man, I put away the childish things. Now, some of you are still responding to stimulus as the hurt child, as the humiliated child, as the hating child, as the horrified child, as the fearful child. You're still responding to stimulus as that little child. Now God says, okay, all that was fine up till now. Now it's time you put away the childish things. Okay? Now, the memories, whether you actually physically remember them in your conscious mind or not, at this point, you remember what we studied last week in Ezekiel. God has showed you a hole in the wall. Now the hole is that there's something in your defense mechanism that says all my little jobbies, all my walls aren't working right. Right? If they were all working right, you wouldn't be here. Okay, so God has showed you a hole in the wall. Now God says in Ezekiel 8, he said, now you start digging. And when you start digging a little bit, you don't have to dig anymore. I'll open the door. So you can go in and see in this temple. Now, the memories, conscious and subconscious, that of all of this hurting, horrified, hating, humiliated child, they grip and grind us. Just like... You know, just like a sandpaper or worse.
Snow cone maker.
They have almost hypnotic power over us. They are memories of deep emotional pain, of deep emotional resentments, hates, fears, embarrassments, shame. And that's why in James it says, confess your sins one to another and pray for one another, so that you may be healed. Now, I've asked all of you to make this list. And the list includes the things that you are now ashamed of or the things that you have ever in your life been ashamed of. Now, I'm going to go through this, a list of things that we've done before in the other group that are childish things that hopefully will trigger your memory to help you dig in this wall so you can go back and see. Now, what we've seen, and what we've seen all the time, is if we could trace back, it's childhood traumas that manifest themselves in our adult life. Something happens, and we respond emotionally in the same way we would if we were 2 years old, or five, or three. No matter how cool we are, when somebody presses that button, you're back to two or three, and that person has total control over you. Remember, the hallmark of this is Hebrews 2. Don't go there, I'll just read it to you.
Yeah.
It says, and deliver, God's, what God is doing in our lives, in Hebrews 2:15, he's delivering us who through fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage. The fear of death is the fear of separation. And so you've made all these little constructs to protect you from the possibility of being separate. The sickest one that we do is we put ourselves in an isolation booth.
Separation from what, though?
From anything, from what you think of as life. Now, I'll show you how this works.
I need a piece of paper and pencil.
Where were you, Butch?
Which has a break just for that?
I took his.
She stole his.
I thought she was going to do my corner.
Okay, so let's go back in time.
Okay.
Go back to the point of your earliest memories where you feared or saw either the death or divorce or absence of one or both of your parents. And you as a small child, I'm talking about, there are points in your life when as a small child, you may have been in a crib. And you looked and your parents weren't there, and you went insane. You know how little kids do. Well, that kid, that hunk of protoplasm, the reason that kid freaks out so badly is because they perceive that separation as death. You understand that? Now, all the times in your life when you were threatened by either in actuality by the death or divorce or one of your parents, or by the absence or perceived absence of one of the parents, this is the strongest construct or motivator for the building of the groves. Okay? The next issue is the lack of support or approval or verbal encouragement from your parents or your family, which has left you with little or no feeling of worth or value. And that's inexorable. When you're not given support and encouragement. Now, you may have been, but in your mind, you weren't given support or encouragement. In your parents' mind or in your family or friends, they may have been giving it to you. So it's subjective. It's totally subjective. If you didn't see or feel that support and encouragement as a small child, you're going to still respond to life by feeling that you have no worth or little worth. Now the next issue is overprotective parents who never let you pay for a mistake and never let you fail and never let you run out of money. They always jump in to protect you. Now a big one is religious parents without knowledge, who all they did is place on you the fires of Moloch. You should do this. If you don't do this, you're an evil child. You're going to hell.
That could be like a grandmother, too.
Sure. Grandmother. Anybody that you respect.
And this is also not just what we usually call religious.
No.
This is also Canaanite religion.
Egyptian religion.
Well, what do you mean by that?
Well, it's the Canaanite religion could be, you know, a father who is wants you to be a good businessman and tries to teach you how to save money and put
you a second.
How to be nice.
How to be nice, or even how to, you know, start saving.
Nice Christ, finish lives.
Yeah. Now another biggie, the probably second biggest of all of them, is parents are, again, people who you respect, who what you perceive is that they preach one thing and do another. Now this comes into the simplest of simple things. They preach one thing, but you see them do another. They say be honest, yet they teach you to lie. Or you see them lying to each other. And it causes humiliation on your part. It causes separation. Psychic separation. Now, this fear of separation, when you start becoming aware of yourself and your friends as peer groups in your childhood who picked and nagged and harassed and teased you all under the guise of humor. They teased you over nicknames or gave you a nickname or teased you over any of a thousand things. Now, a big one for women here is, and I can't tell you how important this one is, but the idea that you would begin to have your menstrual cycle without anybody telling you it was coming. I mean, that can put fear beyond fear in a woman. Another one is being confronted with sexuality before adolescence, before puberty, I mean. Whether that's in the case of a cousin or, you know, trying to get you to do something, or you trying to get a cousin to do something. I mean, the point is that these create scars that still are affecting you. Another one is the continual feeling of insecurity caused by being in a transient family. Now, transience doesn't necessarily mean moving from city to city or state to state. It can be moving from house to house or apartment to apartment or school to school. But that sense of transience the last statistic I saw said 57% of the families in the United States move once every 3 years. That's mind-blowing, a small child. Okay, now, a big one is inferior adolescent feelings because your face or your body didn't meet some standard. Now, primarily in the area for boys or males, this is essentially, the biggie in this is true in the area of sports. Another one that causes scars that are deeper than deep is any kind of a chronic illness as a small child and the associated depression from that illness. On Pete's case, we're going to find out he had to go to the doctor something like 5 times a week or some ridiculous thing to get shots as a little kid for allergies. I mean, there's no telling what that could do to a...
That's funny when you say that. What that keys to me is not chronic illness in myself, but chronic illness in my mother and father.
Same thing.
And my real intolerance. It's like when somebody else is sick, I have no sympathy, no empathy, no nothing. But if I'm sick, I want everybody to stop.
Another one is the idea that you never had any trust from your mother or father. There was always false accusations. Another one, and it's hard for me to articulate this one because it was me. It's like, how do you describe the ocean if you're in it? But the illusion that you're a loner. But the idea, and it happened to me, and I don't know why, and I haven't been able to pinpoint it, but when I was very, very young, like 3, or in that, I came under the illusion that I didn't need anybody. And, in the world, it was an instrument of being successful, or in some cases admired, or all that bullshit. But in the spirit, it's the worst thing that can happen. Another one is parents who forced you to take sides, and their arguments or their discussions or whatever. Another one is thinking that your parents are dumb. Thinking that your siblings are dumb. Being ashamed of either your parents or your sisters or brothers. I'm sure that's what caused in me the idea that I didn't like my dad, and I was ashamed of my dad, and I don't even know why. But I think that's what caused me to have the idea of the illusion of being the lone wolf, or of aloneness, that I didn't need anybody.
What's the opposite one? I'm asking. Huh? I felt just the opposite in that role. I felt like everyone in the family was a lot brighter than me.
Well, that's the same. We'll get where the other side of the coin is that we'll get to that one in a minute. I mentioned this one before, but I can't. But nicknames can be devastating to a little kid. if parents are people you respect, put expectations on you that you're not able to meet, then your response to them will be that everybody's better than you. You see what I'm saying? That's what are being compared to like if you had an older brother or an older sister and they were the perfect kid and they made perfect grades and in your mind you can never meet that expectation. So in effect you become intimidated by either your parents or your siblings. A huge one is sexual abuse. Now some of you were sexually abused and you don't remember it. With small children. I'm talking about sexual abuse with regard to either by a brother or even a boyfriend or a girlfriend. I mean, I'm talking about if you're a girl, a girlfriend, or a boyfriend, if you're a boy, when you're real little. And the attendant shame that'll overwhelm you over it. Well, there's also the mental, corresponding with that is not just sexual abuse, but it's physical and mental abuse. When, you know, in the name of discipline, somebody's beating you all the time. But you can be beat just as badly verbally.
Or with a look.
Or with a look. Well, obviously another one is bad grades. And it's interesting how, you know, at points in time, you're shamed as a youngster over many of these issues and many other, but you end up, your conscience is seared as with a hot iron so that you don't even remember them anymore. That's why it says this must include the things that you ever were ashamed of. Now, another one is having absolutely no physical skills. You can't walk and chew gum at the same time.
Clutch.
I'm talking as a small child. You may have developed late. Maybe you were one that you're supposed to start crawling at whatever age you're supposed to start crawling, and you didn't crawl until you were a year old. Well, you don't know that, but you will hear your parents or somebody will say, "Well, I don't know what's wrong with him or her. There may be some mental retardation here or something." And you'll hear that.
Actually, I started walking. Later.
I don't know. Cranked around like last week.
And the other, with regard to physical development, especially for a woman or a guy, if a guy is real tall, so it's either early or late physical development, or a woman starts developing big breasts, or a woman is taller than everybody else in the class. You know, all of these comparisons. One of the things that we're going to do if we have time is we're going to do some role playing to see if you can emotionalize. No, things like. No, we're not going to get. That didn't mean we're going to go and drag. It means things like.
That's what he was hoping for. He was hoping. Yeah.
Another one is a fear of homosexuality, because of experimentation as a child. I hate to tell you this, but for a male, one of the biggest ones is the size of your penis.
I'm
shocked.
You
mean too big or something?
I'm sorry. Probably just nervous.
You don't have anything to be nervous about the ice.
Mr. Happy.
Mr. Happy, yeah.
Yeah, shake hands.
Well, you know, we could go on and on, but that's enough to get your...
That's not.
That's enough.
I think
we've
gone too far.
I digress. I'm going to end up with science.
The way in which the promise of God is that you will be able to walk through the high places without them affecting you, that you'll be able to lay hands on or be overcome the high place, the controlling influence. And the promise of God is that He's stronger than you. And that this isn't something that's going to happen. You don't have to spend hours agonizing over lists. You start digging, and the promise is He'll open the door. And the victory comes from not by might nor by power, but by His Spirit. Because the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, temperance, meekness, mercy, etc. Against such there is no law. Nothing can stand against the fruit of the Spirit. Now, all that we're doing here is we're opening up these areas of ourselves so that the power of the Spirit can be expressed. Now, as I told you before, the things that most of you are ashamed of will come down in one way or another connected with sexuality. Because sexuality in your hunk of protoplasm is the opposite of death. Separation is death. The way to get around death is sexuality. That's the bridge. I'm talking about something that's so basic that we don't see it. I want us to be controlled and operated only by faith which worketh by love. Now the fear in many of you is, well, if I don't have these little quirks, then I won't enjoy sex anymore. Or if I don't have these little quirks, then I'll lose, then I'll be. Well, those little quirks, and those, I don't care about the quirks. I care about the quirks having control over you. And I've got just as many. The problem with being a teacher is that I'm going to have to be first in exposing this crap in me. So.
Don't worry, there's freedom on the other side.
Yeah.
Okay? Any other thoughts? Stand still and see the salvation of God. That's all I've been trying to tell you. You don't have to look anymore. You're home. You don't have to run anymore. You don't have to tap dance. God can't deny Himself when He's in you. You know, all He wants from us is to present ourselves to Him without reservation. A living sacrifice. You know, this is big time stuff that we're about to undertake. But it's simply an opportunity for God to prove His faithfulness. I've been young and I've been old, and yet never have I seen the seed forsaken, nor the righteous begging for bread. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Never. That's what the promise of that prayer is. Return unto me the joy of thy salvation. And that's what he's doing. Can you rest in that? Problem is, see, we don't have a great deal of many options. That's the problem with all this bullshit.
The real problem is God's having them tearing down. Build up. It hurts so much. Make it start now.
I would ask, we're becoming a family.
Amen.
Take it, big guy.